Barstool Sports brings you Storyboards, a new docuseries featuring full-length podcast productions about the most iconic figures in sports and pop culture. Presented by Lisa Mattresses without commercial interruption, this is Dave Chappelle, Sometimes You Gotta Race. For $75 off your next mattress purchase, go to Lisa.com and use the promo code STORYBOARDS. Lisa Mattresses. Mattresses, mattresses, mattresses.
Let's start the show.
Timing is everything in all aspects of life, but particularly in the entertainment world, particularly in the world of comedy. If your brand of comedy is too soon, the world ain't ready for you. You end up like Marty McFly at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, playing Johnny B. Goode. If you're too late, you're unoriginal. You're late to the party, you're nothing but a copycat. But when you can hit that sweet spot, when the world is craving your humor and they don't even really know it yet, that's when something special happens. When you can unleash all-world talent at the exact right time, that's when you achieve greatness. And in the late 90s and early 2000s, that's exactly what Dave Chappelle did. Dave Chappelle's brand of humor is the perfect storm of intelligence and funny. It's acute racial awareness mixed with impeccable social observation, and both of those were made possible by his deep respect and understanding of the historical context of how our society operates. If you blend all that together, the result is genius material that pushed boundaries, provoked thought, and offended people of every color by forcing them to admit that some stereotypes are just true. He offended white people.
You ever ask a white guy who's voting for you? Hey, Bob, who are you going to vote for? Dave, whoa. Take it easy now. Take it easy. So anyway, I was fucking my wife in her ass, right? And I mean, it was something else. Yeah. But who are you voting for? Dave, come on with the voting. Trying to tell you about fucking my wife, you're asking me all these personal questions.
You offended black people.
I spoke at my old high school and I told them kids straight up, if you guys are serious about making it out of this ghetto, you gotta focus, you gotta stop blaming white people for your problems, and you've gotta learn how to rap or play basketball or something, nigga, you're trapped. You are trapped. Either do that or sell crack. That's your only options. That's the only way I've ever seen it work. Better get to entertaining these white people, nigga. Get to dancing. Go on out there and be somebody.
Women
tell stories and all these feelings. Well, first of all, you have to understand, I was on my period and I just talked to my mother, so I was feeling like, God damn, there's too many feelings. What the fuck happened? Get to it.
And even children.
Hey, baby. Baby, go home, man. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. What the fuck are you doing up? The baby said, I'm selling weed, nigga. I said, oh, shit.
And I think the main reason he was able to do all this was not only because of the meticulous material, but his delivery. From his voices and his generic impressions, down to his lanky, wiry frame. If I had to guess, I think Dave Chappelle was about 6 feet tall, 160 pounds, and had a wingspan of 7'2". Dave Chappelle was like an animated cartoon character. He was a caricature delivering truth bombs with wit and wordplay. Jokes and punchlines that ordinarily would be felt as offensive to white folks, they just came off as funny. He pulled no punches, but somehow he came off as non-threatening. And the reason I think people were simply laughing instead of offended was honesty, accuracy, self-deprecation, and timing. Now, over the last 10 years during his disappearance or hiatus or whatever the fuck you want to call it, I've often found myself saying, I wish Chappelle was around for this. There's been tons of storylines and events that were right in his wheelhouse. But the truth is, I don't know if 2017 can handle Dave Chappelle. The fake outrage generation we're in the middle of right now would be horrified by Chappelle's content. And so whether it was planned out or pure serendipity, Chappelle's rise to fame occurred at the perfect time. Spent the early 90s with bit roles in somewhat popular movies. He was Achu in Men in Tights. He was Pinball Parker in Con Air. Which, let's be honest, I love Con Air. Men in Tights was hilarious. But looking back on it, now knowing who Chappelle is and what he's become, those were some weird movie roles for him. But then he landed that role as Reggie in Nutty Professor. kind of put him on the map. He was Tully in Blue Streak. And then, of course, his breakout starring role, Thurgood in Half-Baked.
Well, you know, I'd be from Jamaica, man. Not a mercy.
What part of Jamaica?
Right near the beach. Boy!
All those movies, cult classic films, that I'll gladly watch whenever I stumble upon them on a Sunday afternoon. But none of those actually showcased the true talents of Dave Chappelle. None of them showed that clever, thought-provoking wit. None of them showed the savant that Dave Chappelle truly is. But what it did do is provide enough social proof and clout that when his first full-length comedy special came out, you were already sold on, that's the dude from Half-Baked.
From the historic Lincoln Theater in Washington, D.C., Dave Chappelle.
Killing Them Softly. It's a 57-minute masterpiece. Within the first 4 minutes of the show, he's talking about spreading your cheeks and lifting your ball sack.
You know what I mean? Like, you're a white lady. You ever been pulled over before? You know, and then what they say, let me see your driver's license and your registration, right? See? See, I'm just guessing. That's not what they say to us. Well, you wouldn't believe what they say to us.
Spread your cheeks and lift your sack. Like, what the fuck?
2 minutes later, we're introduced to Chip, Chappelle's hypothetical white friend.
My white buddy, he was smoking a joint.
Dave, it's the goddamn cops. I'm gonna ask him for directions.
I said, Chip, no! Chip, don't do it!
A very important comedic device that he concocted to tell stories, quote-unquote stories, with his quote-unquote friend. Basically just a way to make fun of us white folks.
And we get at a red light. We stop at a red light, and a car pulls up next to us, and I'll never forget it. Chippy looks at me, he's all drunk, and she's like,
Dave, I'm gonna race him.
I knew it was a bad idea. But I was high. I tried to explain to him it was a bad idea, but all that came out was, well, nigga, sometimes you got race. I don't know.
And before we've reached 10 minutes, Chappelle is dropping N-bombs, breaking down race relations with the police.
I mean, I'd be scared to talk to the police when I'm sleepy. They fuck around and get the wrong idea.
Oh, my God. That nigga was on PCP, Johnson.
I had to use necessary force. You saw him.
No paperwork. Just sprinkle some crack on him. Let's get out of here.
That entire first segment breaks down police brutality, white and black relations, and the difference between the rich people and the poor people in society.
Oh, you know, that's a whole brutality thing. That's common knowledge now. There was a time when only minorities really knew about that. I'm not going to say white people didn't believe us, but you were a little skeptical. You were a little skeptical. I mean, I don't blame you. And then Newsweek printed it, he knew it was true. And then Newsweek, white people were like, oh, my God.
Honey, did you see this? Apparently, the police have been beating up Negroes like hotcakes. It's in the May issue.
And this is where Dave Chappelle really started to shine. The storytelling, the picture painting, the voices, the characters, all of it combines to accomplish one thing, his main skill, Chappelle's core competency, his bread and butter, making fun of white people.
Nobody knows what white people eat. You've been very good at keeping that shit a secret amongst yourselves. I study white people. You don't know that. I'm writing a paper on you. Not even for school, nigga, just to do it, just to get just doing this independent research. I'm spending my money. That's why I'm working so hard. I follow you around grocery stores. They freak out. I just try to peek in the cart. They always see me. Get away from my cart, nigga. What are you looking at? Chicken and giblets are over there. You must be lost. These are vegetables.
A man can be an artist in anything. Food, whatever. It depends on how good he is at it. Dave Chappelle's art is making fun of white people. and Killing Them Softly was his first masterpiece. It was done in such a way that you just shrugged your shoulders and laughed. It was truthful. It was original. A lot of times it was eye-opening. Chappelle would drop a white stereotype that I wasn't even aware of.
All white people talk about when they get high is other times that they got high. I could listen to that shit all night.
Dude, remember at Frank's last week? It's fucking smashed, man.
And catalogs everything they drink.
Two shots of Jaeger. Tequila. Four bong hits, man. Beer. Cheeseburger.
He'd drop it right after making fun of himself or black people or another race, and he did it with a chuckle and a smile, and so instead of becoming some shock value hateful racism, it just turned into truthful humor. Again, honesty, accuracy, and timing. And if racism was Dave Chappelle's fastball for Killing Them Softly, his material on women was his breaking ball. It was the perfect complementary material. It stopped being a white and black thing and turned into a male and female thing. The crowd was divided into white people and black people laughing with and at each other. And then with the flip of a switch, races united, and it became a man and woman thing.
Like, I hear women say this all the time. I know a lot of you sisters be like, chivalry is dead, don't you? Don't y'all feel that way? Like, men aren't gentlemen anymore? That's right. Chivalry is dead, and women killed it.
Black guys and white guys coming together, dapping it up like, yes, indeed, Tyrell, these hoes are crazy. White girls and black girls together cursing their men under their breath. The only thing more universal than Chappelle's racial truths were his gender truths, and he delivered it all perfectly on Killing Them Softly.
Men have nice cars, not because they like nice cars, because they know women like nice cars. That's how it goes. Because men are hunters, and the car is the bait. And a woman comes and says, ooh, nice Porsche. Gotcha, bitch.
Took all that racial material, mixed it all together with the gender humor, and then he sprinkled in the perfect amount of miscellaneous jokes.
They got a character on there named Oscar. They treat this guy like shit the entire show. They judge him right in his face. Oscar, you are so mean. Isn't it, kids?
Yeah, Oscar. You're a grouch.
It's like, bitch, I live in a fucking trash can.
I'm the poorest motherfucker on Sesame Street. Nobody's helping me.
I wouldn't go there if I knew the way. Who would want to live in a neighborhood like that? Fucking 6-foot pigeons walking around. An elephant that's a junkie.
Hyper.
Yeah, that's right, Snuffy.
Hi, Bird, I'm sick. I need some smack, Bird.
And we watched a Pepe Le Pew, but I'm old now. I'm looking like, good God, what kind of fucking rapist is this guy? Like, take it easy, Pepe. And terrorists are smart. They know what they're doing there, you know. They terrorists. They know it's black people's bad bargaining chips. They called the White House.
Hello? We have got 5 black... Hello?
Plus the perfect finale calling back to his previous joke, and you could make the argument that Killing Them Softly is the perfect stand-up routine.
God almighty, is that a baby? I know, that's gross. It's gross. Because it was a baby. It was the same baby from the project. She's like, I snuck in the club, nigga. I got that weed if you need me. Just pat on the ass, and I'll come out. Hey, guys, thank you very much.
The only problem with it was that it was only 1 hour long. You could tell there was just so much more to dig into, so much more to flesh out, so much more inside that weird-ass brain of Dave Chappelle. And that's what Comedy Central banked on in 2003, giving him his own TV show. They ordered a season that almost everybody assumed was guaranteed to get canceled. From Chappelle to his writers to, I'm sure, even the Comedy Central execs, I don't think anybody was convinced that a sketch comedy show hosted by a skinny black dude with a weird voice and an aggressive sense of humor would last. And so when you're faced with that prospect, there's two ways you can deal with it. One, get on air and tiptoe your way through it. Try not to rock the boat too much. Try not to cross any lines. And just milk that deal as long as you can. Or two, you come out of the gates, episode one, about a blind, black, white supremacist named Clayton Bigsby.
Sir, my message is simple. Naggers, Jews, homosexuals, Mexicans, Arabs, and all kinds of different chanks stink, and I hate it.
The fucking balls it takes to air that as one of your first skits on your first episode is absolutely unbelievable. A dozen N-bombs, characters dressed as Klansmen, allusions to horrendous racial violence, one man's head exploding with some truly budget CGI. Clayton Bigsby announced Dave Chappelle's presence on television. To be honest, I wish that Chappelle and those Comedy Central execs really knew the extent of his popularity. I think it would have been totally different. Because I can vividly remember being a freshman in college with every single dude on my floor being flat out excited for the premiere of that TV show. A bunch of us crowded into one dorm room to watch episode one like it was a big game, like it was a sporting event. I can remember getting phone calls from my mom quoting Killing Them Softly. Middle-aged white woman, even she found it hysterical. There was so much juice leading up to that TV premiere, and I don't think they knew it. The world was craving that type of humor, and Chappelle and his writers were ahead of the curve. By delivering immediately with Clayton Bigsby, the tone had been set. That was a lead-off home run. In hindsight, this was foreshadowing that really nobody could have seen at the time. When Dave Chappelle ended up walking away from Comedy Central, everyone asked, who on earth walks away from $50 million? And the answer is, it's the same dude who leads off his TV career with a blind black white supremacist dropping N-bombs left and right. It's hard to top Clayton Bigsby in my mind, but Chappelle's show did just that. Episode after episode after episode, skit after skit after skit, constantly raising the bar. Introducing new characters, new skits, new jokes, new musical acts over and over again. Anyone out there who was offended by Clayton Bigsby must have had a fucking aneurysm from season 2's The Nigger Family.
I bet you'll get the finest table of niggas ever got in this restaurant.
The most blatant disregard for the FCC since Janet showed her titty at the Super Bowl. It really was the perfect skit for Chappelle. Seemingly gratuitous use of the world's most offensive word, but within the context and framework of that joke, it worked perfect. The N-word in that skit is practically necessary, and therein lies Chappelle's brilliance, the ability to take offensive material and make it simply necessary for his humor. In my opinion, the overarching highlight of Chappelle in season one was what I call his what-if skits. They were ridiculous hypothetical situations that he somehow brought to life to play out in a hysterical manner. Clayton Bigsby is the perfect example. Chappelle asked the question, what if a white supremacist was black and he didn't know it? And it went on from there. What if, instead of all white people and one black person on the real world, it was all black people and one white person?
And you had sex with Katie.
Wait a minute, you got that all wrong. I ain't have sex with Katie. Lysol had sex with Katie. I just filmed it.
No, Tyree, you had sex with me too.
Correction, I had sex with Katie.
What if black people were paid reparations for slavery?
Our top story? As we all know, Congress recently approved paying over $1 trillion to African Americans as reparations for slavery. Well, today, the first checks were sent out.
Thanks, Chuck. We're standing here in front of the Olympic Liquor Store in Queens, where scores of African Americans have been lined up for hours. We spoke to a few of them earlier.
Get the money, y'all! There's poor people around! With your broke ass!
Right, baby, I just bought this truck straight cash. And I got enough cigarettes to last me and my family for the rest of our lives! I'm rich, bitch!
What if we redid everyone's ethnic background and had a racial draft?
I'm excited to see who's going to be drafted by which race. Seated behind me on the stage there are the various representatives, and believe it or not, the blacks have actually won the first pick.
Oh my. Wow, that's the first lottery a black person's won in a long time, Billy.
Yes, and they'll probably still complain.
Man, you.
What if Nostradamus was black?
For centuries, people have turned to one man for the answer to life's great mysteries. That man is Nigradamus.
Nigradamus, why do white people love Wayne Brady so much?
White people love Wayne Brady because he makes Brian Gumbel look like Malcolm X.
Chappelle was so on point with answering these questions and bringing things to life. The dude invented a fucking reality television show premise that actually became a TV show.
Hi, and welcome to Trading Spouses, the show where we take two married couples and, you guessed it, make them trade spouses for a whole month. Watch the sparks fly today, because for the first time on our show, we're going interracial.
He explained exactly what it would be like if a black man became president.
Because you don't understand what it looks like for us. So let me help paint the picture. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you now Black Bush.
President Bush continues to make his case for an invasion of Iraq.
After carefully examining the region, me and my cabinet agree that that area is definitely ripe for regime change.
All right.
But if I can be real about it.
Be real, son.
Real?
Be real, real, son.
Try to kill my father, man.
What?
And play that.
Say where they tried to kill your father, son.
That nigga tried to kill my father!
Everything we love coming to see y'all, son.
Dude was so ahead of his time, he was creating skits and they were coming to life. And it's these sort of moments that make people long for Chappelle every single time a major life event happens. When Tiger Woods was caught banging hookers, we needed Chappelle. When a black man finally took office, we needed Chappelle. When the hippies at Occupy Wall Street took over New York, we needed him. When fucking Falcon the Balloon Boy was sailing away to his death in a hot air balloon, we needed him. All those situations that lent themselves to that next level social commentary, that's where Chappelle shined. And it wasn't always just the predictions and answering the unanswerable and all that next level stuff. Chappelle also created characters that were just straight up funny. Tyrone Biggums, the most quoted crackhead of all time.
You know what dog food tastes like? Do you? It tastes just like it smells. Delicious. I'm
gonna show you how I hold Tron.
Hot hand in a dice game, baby girl. 6 hours straight, talking about clackety, 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 clack.
Leonard Washington.
Who the fuck is Renee Zellweger?
Ashley Larry.
That's right, baby. I just bought this truck straight cash. And I got enough cigarettes to last me and my family for the rest of our lives. I'm rich, bitch.
But to me, the greatest characters Chappelle ever created was the Player Haters of the Year. Led by Silky Johnston, who was Buck Nasty, Beautiful, Mr. Roboto. They were the most hateful collection of mark-ass marks, trick-ass marks, punk bitches, skip-scap-skanks and scallywags, hoes, heifers, hee-haws, and hooly-hoos.
One and only, Silky Johnston! Silky Johnston is nominated for calling in a bomb threat to the Special Olympics, man!
Everyone has a Chappelle skit or character they identify with, and for me, it's Silky Johnston, the true hater of the year. So much hate in his heart, it overflowed and filled up his lungs, and he started to drown in it. For a true hater like myself, for someone whose first thought is always, fuck that or fuck you, for someone who hates seeing others succeed, it gets no better than Silky Johnston and the Player Haters of the Year.
I hate you, I don't even know you, and I hate your guts. I hope all the bad things in life happen to you and nobody else but you.
And along with the Player Haters and all those characters, there was also multiple recurring skits. There was great moments in hookup history, when keeping it real goes wrong. And then, in season two, there was Charlie Murphy and his True Hollywood Stories. If Dave Chappelle were a band, the Rick James and Prince True Hollywood Stories would be his two hits that he plays during his encore. They are his mainstream number one smash hits. They produce the catchphrases of, I'm Rick James, bitch, and game, blouses. Fuck your couch, and I wish I could give those titties four thumbs down. They were truly original content. They were unheard stories about megastar celebrities partying in the 80s. Charlie Murphy narrating, presented with Chappelle reenacting Rick James, Eddie Murphy, and Prince. And those True Hollywood Stories were a gift and a curse. They were the skits that blew the roof off of Comedy Central and took Chappelle to the mainstream. But they were also the skits that I believe precipitated the demise of Chappelle's show. You can't say that they jumped the shark because that implies that they weren't funny or well done. Those skits were brilliant. But they were also the skits that led to every random person in the street screaming, I'm Rick James, bitch, right in Dave Chappelle's face. I think they were the skits that took Chappelle's show to a level that he was uncomfortable with. A level of exposure, pressure, and production constraints that ultimately led to him walking away from TV. Walking away from $50 million. With little to no explanation, poof, the show was gone and Dave Chappelle moved to Africa. It's stunning. It's absolutely incomprehensible for an average person to walk away from $50 million. But Dave Chappelle is not an average dude. He masquerades as one. His material presents him as one. He seems relatable. He's socially aware. He seems normal, but he's not. Anyone that funny, anyone who captivated the entertainment world like he did, is an artist. And artists are weird fucking people, man. They have morals and standards and shit. They have scruples that are somehow unaffected by a paycheck. People like me and you have a word for that. We call that crazy. And Dave Chappelle didn't appreciate that word.
The worst thing to call somebody is crazy, is dismissive. I don't understand this person, so they're crazy. That's bullshit. These people are not crazy. They're strong people. Maybe the environment is a little sick.
And along with that public backlash rubbing him the wrong way, Chappelle pinpointed a moment when he realized that some of his skits were becoming what he described as socially irresponsible. Namely, it was a skit with racist pixies where Chappelle was in blackface, and white people on the set of the show were laughing at him, not with him. Now again, for me and you, you can laugh in my fucking face all you want for $50 million. But not for Dave Chappelle. You do that to a guy who takes comedy that seriously and he's fucking out. He'll pick up and move to another continent. He'll live in seclusion with his family in Ohio. Sometimes you gotta race. Because you can't fuck with a guy like Dave Chappelle. You can't play chicken with him. And Comedy Central found that out the hard way. Chappelle was on the record as saying he was willing to come back and finish with what he started as long as the production atmosphere was right. And as long as they didn't air the episodes he had recorded for season 3 without his permission. And Comedy Central basically said, fuck you, and they released what they called the lost episodes, which was about half a season of the material he recorded for season 3. And that was that. Chappelle closed the door on the network and Chappelle's show. So as a diehard Chappelle fan, let me just say, congratulations, Comedy Central. You played yourself. And also let me say, fuck that pixie skit, and fuck those white dudes who laughed at Dave Chappelle. Because who knows, without those pixies, without those guys laughing, maybe he doesn't go into hiding. Maybe we'd have seasons 4 through 10. The whole reaction from Dave Chappelle is something I can vaguely relate to on an infinitesimal level. Some sliver of me can understand where he's coming from. Because the early days of Barstool was truly the wild, wild west. You could say and do whatever the fuck you want. But as we gained more success and more exposure, I started to have these thoughts of, wow, everybody is going to see this now, creeping into my brain. Every single blog, every podcast, I thought, I can't get away with this anymore. Now, me, I'm an asshole, and I still just say dumb and irresponsible things in the name of a cheap laugh. Because backlash, at this point, is nothing more than a few people getting mad online. But a guy like Dave Chappelle, with all-world talent and all-world exposure, had an attack of conscience about his position of power, and he had too much pride for the corporate world. And you know what? I don't hate that. I hate that it forced him to disappear. I hate that it forced him to miss some of the biggest comedic moments of the decade. But if Dave Chappelle wasn't that type of guy, if he didn't take his craft that seriously and have that type of personality, I don't think Killing Them Softly and For What It's Worth and the first 2.5 seasons of Chappelle's Show would be even remotely as funny. It's kind of like the candle that burns twice as bright burns half as long, that type of shit. And so the candle was blown out and the dark days of Chappelle were upon us. In the first couple years, it was, you can't possibly really be walking away, right? And then it's just a hiatus. And then eventually it turned into, well, he's gone, but he's got to be coming back soon. You'd hear whispers of an impromptu appearance at the Laugh Factory or some small-time comedy club and think, maybe this is it, maybe he's back. It was like going through a breakup where you're holding out hope you're going to get back together with the girl. It was like the stages of grieving after a death. And after a long enough time, we just all got to acceptance. Dave Chappelle was gone, and there was no point in waiting up for him to come home at night. And then so roughly 10 years go by, and like some sort of goddamn racist phoenix rising from the ashes of his television career, Dave Chappelle resurfaces. Does 10 shows at Radio City Music Hall in New York. Does appearances on The Tonight Show, a sit-down with Letterman. It was that same wit and humor. The only difference was this time about 40 pounds of muscle on his frame, which was rather fitting. It was like a Chappelle reboot. Chappelle 2.0. He was back, but he wasn't the same guy. He wasn't trying to recapture 2006. He was a newer version of himself. Basically less reckless, more jacked. Probably a bit less funny, comparatively speaking, but literally nobody could recapture that level of humor from his prime. But for the diehards, we got what we finally wanted. Chappelle was back, and he was commenting on the latest news, the latest current events, the latest social developments. And for anybody out there who thought maybe Chappelle might have lost his fastball during that time away, one night in Manhattan at Webster Hall, he came out throwing 99 on the black, delivering this two-minute joke that I think arguably no other comedian on the planet could pull off. The build-up here is slow and bizarre, but just stick with it. I promise the payoff is spectacular.
All these movements, not to get deep, all these movements probably start, not even the 60s, all this shit started in 1945. That's when America just fucking lost its mind. It was after that Second World War. Think about it. Because black Americans went off and fought in a war. They went to Europe. They made more money than they ever made in America. They might even got their dick sucked by white women. And then they came back to the United States and they looked around and they said, you know what? I don't like the way I'm being treated around here. But it wasn't just black dudes. At the same time, all the women in America went into the workforce because all the men were gone. That's when you see that old poster in the 40s with that dyke, like, we can do it. That's where that's from. And these women made money, and then the dudes came back home and started telling these women what to do, and they were like, yo, I'm not feeling you, nigga. At the same time, the CIA started experimenting with a drug in San Francisco. Back then, nobody knew about it, called LSD. By 1960, all the white kids in America were like, it works. And a new school of thought was unleashed on the American consciousness. People had never even thought like that before, and now they were thinking like that in mass. White kids in mass were like, fuck our parents' plans for us. By the time 1960 rolled around, the president of the United States was 42 years old. He was the next best hope. And they blew his brains out in Dallas, in fucking parade. That's the most gangster shit. There were 8 major assassinations in the 60s. Kennedy, X, King, Evers. And then, by the 70s, the white youth culture and the Black Panthers and the black youth culture started to merge. He started to see Timothy Leary meeting Eldridge Cleaver in Africa, not Oakland. And that was the beginning of the 70s, one of the most turbulent decades this nation has ever seen. And I say all that to say this, that in that turbulent historical context, Bill Cosby raped 34 people.
Perhaps the only dude with the clout and the cachet to stand up there and give a 40-year history of the civil rights movement and then drop a rape bomb on everyone as the punchline. The only dude with the knowledge, the delivery, and the balls to string the audience that long and then ultimately have them uproariously laughing about dozens of rapes. It's stand-up comedy, Chappelle's first true love at its finest. And so now here we are, 2017. I said earlier, I don't know if the world can handle Chappelle's material. The official return is imminent, though. 2 comedy specials out of 3 that are going to be released on Netflix. $60 million in the bank for Dave. Finally getting that payday he truly deserves. I don't know, maybe he got tired of feeding his kids those quote-unquote integrity sandwiches that he joked about with Letterman. Or maybe he finally made peace with his celebrity status. Maybe he finally made peace with the impact his comedy had on the world and his people. Only Chappelle knows. All I know is that I think the timing is right. The world is so pathetically uptight, yet simultaneously a bigger shit show than it's ever been. Everyone wants everything to be correct and proper. Meanwhile, everything is completely flipped upside down. That's a dichotomy only a guy like Chappelle can tackle. So if you ask me, the timing is perfect. Sometimes you gotta race.